and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Sevilla. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be taking a look at the career of Oscar-winning filmmaker Billy Wilder. We're going to be taking a trip back to classic Hollywood as we take a look at the career of one of the most iconic and celebrated filmmakers of all time. I'm very excited to be taking a bit of a step back and tackle something very different from what we're used to talking about here on Film Fragments, where we primarily talk about newer actors and directors and what have you, but we're going very far back in time to talk about one of the most influential filmmakers working. Well, not working anymore because he's not alive, but y'all get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Today, I'm very excited to be doing this episode with our guest. Our guest today is the very lovely Sarah Siplicus. She is the publications director and the co-founder of an outlet that I am a part of, The Rolling Tape. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you here. I cannot wait to delve into the career of Billy Wilder with you. And before we do that, I would love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
Yeah, so I got into film in undergrad. I actually got a major in world cinema, and there is where I kind of discovered my love for film, specifically talking about film, writing about film, things of that nature. It's also there that I discovered Billy Wilder. I had a class on great directors and spent a very long time talking about Billy Wilder, his history, you know, as a person, as a filmmaker, and his filmography. And I love it very much, so I'm really, really excited to be on this episode. And yeah, after undergrad, I started The Rolling Tape with Danny Jerebeck and Eugene Rocco Udley. And then I met you, and here we are, writing about film, also podcasting, and doing things of that nature. And now I'm living in Paris and getting my master's degree, but continuing to talk with you guys online about movies.
So exciting that you're here. And you're in Paris right now talking. I always love whenever I have a guest that's based internationally, even though you are an American. So it is kind of cool to have someone that's, you know, literally in another on another continent, which is so exciting. We here at Film Fragments don't talk to just people that are based in America. We talk to people from all over the globe, which is very, very fun. So you talked a little bit about how you took this class on great directors and you spent a lot of time talking about Billy Wilder. What made you so attached to him and make you appreciate him as much as you did? And why do you think a lot of people still celebrate Billy Wilder as one of the greatest filmmakers of all time?
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of noir films, 1940s, 1950s crime movies. So immediately I was really interested in a lot of his filmography. But as I kind of dove into his catalog more, he's done some comedies and buddy films and things that are very, very different from the classic noir, which I think is what he's known for. But I really respect that he's a writer, and I think first and foremost as a writer than a director. And I think his screenplays are so smart, you know, whether he's done them by himself or he's adapted a material or worked with other people. I think when you really listen to the dialogue and you see how the screenplay plays out, they're really, really creative and quick-quipped films, you know, like there's so many layers to them. And in a crime film, that's great, you know, because you get little details and you kind of piece together things as they're going out. And then in comedies, you know, just the jokes one after another are so, so funny. And I think it's so interesting and I admire that he's able to be very serious and write some really awesome crime thrillers. But also he can be really, really funny. And I think having that range as a screenwriter and as a director is just super impressive.
Yeah, I agree. He is one of the most versatile talents that we've ever gotten in the film industry, to where you would think of him doing one specific kind of genre, but he's tackled so many different things in his long period as a filmmaker, as a writer, as a director. And, you know, he's won 7 Oscars, which is insane. That's pretty incredible. He garnered 21 nominations, which is huge. And again, you would think of him as a guy that does all these film noir, detective crime films, but he's done comedies, he's done his fair share of dramas, he's done some thrillers, he's done it all, which I'm really impressed by. I got into Billy Wilder in college as well. I saw Sunset Boulevard in high school in a film class that I took, And then it wasn't until college where I too had a class which went very much into Billy Wilder's career. And what's funny about this class is that this class was cut short in person because this was during the height of COVID. So while I was watching a few of Billy Wilder's films in person with all these fellow film students that I was attending college with, it had to be cut short. And then I was marathoning a whole bunch of his movies in the comfort of my own home, which was really cool. And as I really started getting into his career, I was like, wow, I'm becoming a really big fan of Billy Wilder, especially with, I would say, two of the films. My top two on this list have become two of my all-time favorite films. So I'm really excited to delve into his career with you today. And I will say, and we talked a little bit about this off air, unfortunately, because time is crazy and life is very hectic right now, I didn't get to do as much marathon for this episode as I wanted to, which is very disappointing because I know that Billy Wilder has a lot of celebrated films, but again, life gets in the way. I'm pretty proud of my list though, regardless, but I will say, and I'm sure you may agree with me on this, emphasis on may, I feel that our top fours are the common top four for Billy Wilder. Whenever people look up Billy Wilder ranked list, it's always the same four that are in the four. The order varies, but it's always those same four films. But we'll see. We'll see if you throw a curveball and surprise me. You probably will, but you know, we'll have to see. We're hoping that you do. So let's get right into our top five favorite films directed by Billy Wilder. So Sarah, what is your number five favorite Billy Wilder film of all time?
Yes, so my number five is Sabrina from 1954. It is a romantic comedy starring Audrey Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart. This film was remade, I believe, in the 90s with Harrison Ford, and I really love that movie. I think it's a really cute romantic comedy. But I didn't know Billy Wilder actually wrote it and directed the original, so I was actually really excited when I was revisiting his films to watch kind of the origin of a movie that I already loved. So basically the film is about this girl who is like the daughter of a chauffeur, and she is in love with one of the sons for the family that she works for. And she's sent away to Paris, like me. and she's still kind of thinking about him, but she really finds herself in Paris and finds this confidence as a young woman. And when she comes back, she's still kind of in love with him. And he sees this blossomed young woman, very chic, very Parisian, and is kind of in love with her now too. But because he's in this rich family, he's already engaged to somebody. So the older son, Humphrey Bogart's character, tries to basically woo her and get her away from the other son. And in turn, he ends up kind of falling in love with her too. So it's a very fun, like, romantic comedy. It's very, you know, cutely written. And I think I related to it a lot. You know, as I said, it's a woman in Paris finding herself. It's really sweet. But it's also kind of, you know, creative, seeing like this older guy kind of fall for a younger woman and seeing really a man like find himself and find what he loves, I think is a really interesting take on a romantic comedy, like focusing on what a man wants out of life rather than just the woman who has already found herself and knows what she wants. So that's really awesome. Also, just Audrey Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart. I mean, that's amazing. Love seeing them. It's very weird seeing Humphrey Bogart in a comedy. That threw me off. But yeah, overall, I really, really enjoyed this film.
So this is not on my list because this is one that I unfortunately haven't seen. It is one that I've wanted to watch for a very long time. One of my best friends in the world is a massive, and I'm talking massive, fan of Audrey Hepburn. So she's like, Brian, what the fuck? Why haven't you watched this movie? And I'm like, listen, there's too many movies and such little time to watch all of them. But no, it's definitely one that I do want to watch, mainly because of, like you said, seeing Humphrey Bogart in a comedy. Mm-hmm. That guy doesn't do comedy. That guy never did comedy. So, you know, just seeing him, knowing that he was in a comedy, especially directed under Billy Wilder, that's a really exciting collaboration. And working with Audrey Hepburn, of course. So it's definitely one that's high on my list. But going into my number five, I am also going to go over romantic comedy. I will say that the amount of enthusiasm that Sarah seemed to have for Sabrina, while I did like this movie, I didn't love it as much as I wanted to. And I'm going to go with The 7-Year Itch. Mm-hmm. This is one that I just watched for the first time very recently. And I expected to finish this movie being like, wow, that was amazing. That was so great. It was fantastic. But it was good. And it's really good, actually. So basically, we follow a man played by Tom L. His family is away for the summer, so he decides to live the life of a bachelor. And then he befriends this beautiful, ditzy blonde who lives in the apartment above him, played by Marilyn Monroe. And they start spending a little too much time together, and shenanigans ensue and what have you. Typical Billy Wilder fashion. I love Marilyn in this. I think she's great. And this film does have one of the most iconic images in film history, where she's in that white dress over the air conditioner or whatever, and her dress just flies up in the air and everything. And it's great. But that's really about it. No, in all seriousness, I mean, I do like the film. I think she and Tom L. have great chemistry with each other. And there's definitely a lot of interesting approaches that are taken with this film, where the character of Richard Sherman is, you know, talking to not the ghost, because this person isn't dead, but talking to a vision of his wife and everything, who's away with her kid. And, you know, then him also envisioning what's going on with him and Marilyn's character, whose name is just the girl. There's no name for her at all, which I completely brushed upon. But yeah, I mean, it's not one of Billy Wilder's stronger ones. Then again, I haven't seen everything that Billy Wilder has directed, but it is one that I wish I was higher on, because it seemed like a movie that would be very much up my alley. And again, it's good. It's just not amazing compared to the four films that I'm about to talk to when we get to our top four. So The 7 Year Itch is my number five. I'm going to assume this is not on your list, because I know that you also just watched this film recently, and you weren't as high on it either.
No, it was cute. It really was. And I think I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I wanted to like it more, because I do think this is one of his most iconic films. Like, it always comes up in conversation. And I think it's one of Marilyn's most iconic films either, because we have that image of her in the white dress that like everyone knows. But I think for me, this film, and honestly, I want to say Sabrina, is the same. It's a cute comedy, but there's pieces of it that almost feel a little dated or not as funny anymore. I mean, this is a film about infidelity. and not being faithful. And Sabrina has a little bit of, I would say, dated jokes when it comes to women. But I think because it's Billy Wilder, I mean, I can't help but laugh through most of it. It's very lighthearted and fun. And, you know, like, it's a good time. It's just, compared to my top four, it just doesn't feel as genius or as great as he's done before. Because, you know, as we get into the later films, I just think, like, they hit the nail on the head so well. Whereas this was just like a good comedy. And I think later on when I discuss other ones, these are great comedies, like perfect. And they don't age, in my opinion. I think this one might have fallen a little bit, you know, as the years go on. Whereas the other ones, I think they're still funny to this day, like really funny. So
I agree. Good. Absolutely. Absolutely. So now going into our number four is, what is your pick?
I'm going to pull up my letterbox because I don't remember. Yes. So my number four is Sunset Boulevard. I honestly think that that's pretty low, you know, and I feel like you're going to tell me that this might be higher for you, maybe. But I mean, we all know this movie. So, so iconic, you know, the screenwriter writing about the silent era and the star who like is no longer in the light because she did silent films, and just like this woman slowly crumbling in this noir-esque era, but also, you know, kind of critiquing Hollywood and how we treat actors, especially female actors. Like, it's so good. And I honestly wish I watched it again for this recording, but I mean, I've seen it a million times. But yeah, I mean, there's not much I can say about the film that it hasn't already been said by millions of people. But like, Gloria Swanson, I think, plays one of the most amazing roles ever, you know, as Norma Desmond. I think she's one of the best like femme fatales, if you will, in any noir. But honestly, one of the best maybe villain or just maybe female character ever to be constructed. Like, she's just so perfect. And I think William Holden does a great performance as well. You know, I just really, really enjoyed it. And for a film that I would say had a pretty limited setting, you know, I would say for the most part, I remember it taking place in the house or the mansion. It's really interesting, like really, really good film. And I love it.
this is a major pass for me. It's very high on my list. cannot wait to talk about it when I get to it. So number four for me is a film that I feel like a lot of people would say is too low on this list, and that is The Apartment from 1960. Mm. I mean, what can you say about this film that hasn't been said already? It's a really wonderful romantic comedy with elements of drama sprinkled throughout, and it has a great ensemble of Jack Lemmon, Shirley MacLaine, Fred McMurray. It's a great film to watch on New Year's. It's a great romance period. Jack Lemmon, this isn't the only time that we'll be talking about him today on this episode, but he's just so friggin' likable. He was one of the most charismatic and hysterical performers that we had during this time. And then Shirley MacLaine, this was just when she was getting her start in the industry. And obviously she's still an actor that's performing today, which is really incredible. She's so good in this. And I will say right off the bat, I don't really like when I'm trying to figure out how to word this. I'm not usually a fan of the short hair look on girls very much, but I think Shirley MacLaine kind of rocks it. I really like her a lot in this. And also it's a New York film, and God, I mean, New York is my dream place. So of course, like naturally it's going to be something that I adore and everything. This film was so critically successful. It made quite a lot of money, too, for the time. Mm-hmm. And it received 5 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. The writing here is so quick and so fast. And the moments where there's serious drama actually really engrossed me. I was really taken aback by that, because even though I had seen Sunset Boulevard and... I saw Double Indemnity at that point too, and there are some serious elements incorporated into those movies as well, but it was just so surprising to see that here in a film that was primarily comedic. And I really loved how Billy Wilder had that range of writing comedy and then writing some drama every so often. It's a wonderful film. I mean, I don't really know what to say that I can't say already. Like, there's affairs involved and insurance and people getting sick and doing all these things. And again, it's a New Year's film. I can't really say we have a lot of films that are great that are primarily set during New Year's. We have great scenes during New Year's in movies, but this is probably the quintessential New Year's watch, whether it's on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. I love the film. I love it. I think it's great. And I don't know what else to say that hasn't been said already. So The Apartment is my number 4. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
It did not make my list.
Oh.
I know. And you know, it didn't make my list because of a film I'll talk about later, but it's a cute movie. I think you're right. The way that it balances comedy and drama just like perfectly summarizes how amazing of a writer Billy Wilder is. You know, and I always looked at this film as a drama more than a comedy, just because, like you said, I was so engrossed by those little pieces that were thrown throughout the film. Like, those really got me. I don't really have a reason as to why it's not in my top 5, other than the fact that the others just hit a little bit harder for me. Jack Lemmon, obviously, like, love him, huge fan. I love him and Fred McMurray kind of opposite of each other in this film. I think Fred McMurray is one of my favorite collabs that Billy Wilder does throughout his career, and we'll definitely talk about it again. And it was cool seeing him in like this crummy guy role. You know, Fred McMurray is like lovable, and he came from kind of these like lighter, lovable, almost Disney type characters. And then he comes to Billy Wilder, and in The Apartment and later films, I mean, he plays horrible people, which I think is crazy. But I think it's so impressive that Billy Wilder got that out of him and really like made him shine. And I think he does the same with Jack Lemmon on the other side. I mean, he made Jack Lemmon so funny. And I think the scripts and the way that Lemmon acts is like perfect, you know?
Absolutely. So now our number 3 is, what is your pick?
This is my curveball, Brian. So I really hope that this is surprising for everyone. My number 3 is Witness for the Prosecution. I watched it this morning, and I was absolutely so engrossed by this film. It honestly could have gotten a higher rating if the other 2 films that I will say weren't in my, like, probably top 20 films of all time. So, like, this is a great movie. It's adapted from an Agatha Christie play, and it's a little, it's really different from most of Wilder's films. It's set in England, which I wasn't really expecting, but I think Wilder kind of dipped into England a little bit in his later films. But it's about a man who's arrested, and then it follows basically his lawyers who try to get him off. And it's the whole trial. You know, this is a very like courtroom drama film. And it's kind of like a weird, quirky, almost funny film at times because the lawyer just came out of having a heart attack. He's struggling with his health, but he doesn't care about his health. He brings brandy and cigars into the courtroom, like things like that that are funny. But it's also like a really interesting courtroom drama with some of the best twists I've ever seen. Thank you, Agatha Christie and Billy Wilder, for that. With great, great performances from Tyrone Power, Charles Laughton, who plays the basically defense attorney, a little different, I think, in England, but just really, really good. Marlene Dietrich plays the wife in this trial, and she's so, so impressive. And I won't say too much about her because I think you really need to see this film. And yeah, I was blown away, and it's so weirdly different from all of other Wilder films that I wasn't expecting to like it, nor was I expecting it to make my top three, but I think this is one of like the best courtroom dramas I've ever seen.
Yeah, this is regrettably one that is not on the list because it's one that I regrettably have not seen. I love courtroom dramas. I'm a sucker for courtroom films. I mean, one of my favorite films of the last 5 to 10 years was a film that just came out this past year, In the Anatomy of a Fall. Mm-hmm. I love courtroom dramas. They're so harrowing to watch. They're so anxiety-inducing. You're on the edge of your seat. And I'm also a sucker for films with a lot of talking. And I know that some people are like, enough talking. I want more action. Mm-hmm. I get it. A lot of talking could sometimes be a little jarring. And there are some dialogue-heavy films that don't wow me because the dialogue has to be compelling for me to be engrossed with what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that whenever I get around to watch it, Witness for the Prosecution, this is going to be one that I do like watching because it's Billy Wilder. And yes, even though I said that I wasn't very high on the 7-year inch, not every director makes a masterpiece, but I'm mm-hmm. sure that when it comes to this, it's one of the great Billy Wilder albums. So I'm very excited to watch that when I get around to it. And mm-hmm. my number three, 1,000% is your number two, because I already know you're number one. number three for me is Double Indemnity. I love Double Indemnity. It's absolutely wonderful. It's one of the great film noirs that we have ever received. Fred McMurray, once again, incredible, just so, so good in this. And then, oh my God, my heart is just racing because I'm about to talk about this performance. Barbara Stanwyck is so alluring. She's so unhinged. So many emotions in this single performance. And that's why she's one of the great female characters I think maybe we've ever gotten in film. I love her so much. And I love the chemistry between the two of them. If the chemistry between the two of them didn't work, the entire film would not have worked. Mm-hmm. So it's great that Billy Wilder got these great performances and this great banter out of these two actors. And then the supporting actors as well are really great. So basically what this film is about is that a rich woman and this insurance agent plot to kill her husband, who does literally nothing wrong. Like, there's nothing wrong with this guy, just to clarify, just so she could get all of his money and everything and collect the insurance, which then pays double if the death is accidental. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's so thrilling. It's so exciting. So I saw this film like literally when we went into lockdown for the first time, and I loved it so much. And then last year, they were showing it at a theater in New York on a film print. And I'm like, well, I gotta go see that. I have to go see this in the theater. And my appreciation for the film skyrocketed upon that second watch. Just watching it with a packed crowd in New York City on a film print, it was so different. It's really incredible how when you watch a movie on the big screen, your appreciation for it could really increase. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm a big proponent of watching movies more than once to properly see how I feel about them. And even mm-hmm. though I liked the movie when I saw it for the first time, I appreciated it way more the second time. It's thrilling, it's exciting, it's insane, it's terrifying. I will say that, and I know that this movie was made 80 years ago, and you know, things were different back in the day, but whenever people get shot in movies during this time and then they just fall back the way they fall back, I'm like, oh, they didn't even look like they tried. It didn't even look convincing. Again, it was a long time ago, so it's different, of course, but I'm able to push that aside. It's really wonderful. Just everything here is executed very incredibly well. I adore the film. It's great. I don't really know what else to say except, like, there's a lot of sequences where I was on the edge of my seat. Mm-hmm. The sequence involving the train was absolutely wild. The death scene itself chills down my spine. And then everything with Barbara Stanwyck, just, oh my God, incredible. Phyllis Dietrichson, incredible character, just truly mm-hmm. riveting stuff. And yeah, every time I'm like, you're a fucking bitch, but God, yes. How about you marry me instead, please? My favorite thing was when I saw the movie again in the theater and I wrote, seeing Barbara Stanwyck on screen, not saying mother for an entire minute challenge, immediate failed. I mean, I'm like, God, she comes on screen, you're like, oh, mother. So Double Indemnity is my number three. And with that, let's transition into our number twos. I'm going to assume this is your number two. Am I correct or am I wrong?
You might be right. This is my number two. Oh my gosh. There's so much I can say about this film. First off, speaking of watching movies more than once, this is definitely my top film for most rewatches. I must have seen this film double digits by now, like almost to 30s. I don't know why I'm so drawn to this film other than it is a damn masterpiece. Like truly... as I said, I'm a huge film noir fan as is, and I've watched this film in the context of studying Wilder. I've, you know, studied this as noir for a genre class, and it's perfect. It fits the, you know, in the best way. It is like, it's the perfect blueprint of what a film noir should be, and every film that came before and after this doesn't do it as well as this film does as far as the genre. You know, and by checking all those boxes, you might be like, oh, it's not original or it's too predictable, but that's so not true. It does it in such a masterful way that you're so drawn to the story, even though as most noirs, you know what's going to happen. You know in the opening scene what has happened, but you're so drawn to it that you can't help but watch to the end. And I mean, I've seen it a million times and I'm still drawn to it, even though not only is it spoiled at the beginning, I've seen it, like, it's well beyond spoiled. You know, the performances, Fred McMurray, as I've said, like, coming out of such great, lovable characters, plays such a crummy guy, but perfectly. You know, I can't think of another actor who can do the role the way he did. You know, he's snarky, he has this, you know, kind of bad personality. You don't really like him, but you're drawn to him, and you almost pity him, but you don't pity him, and it's wonderful, like, getting to go with him. You know, Barbara Stanwyck, I said that Gloria Swanson as Norma Desmond played one of the best femme fatales ever. Barbara Stanwyck is just one above her. Like, these are the two top for me. Barbara Stanwyck is just such a wonderful actress. You know, I've seen quite a few of her films, and in comedies and in noirs, I think she has this like personality that you can't help but be drawn to her, even though she's got a cold edge to her. I love the sarcasm that she brings in all of her roles, and like you can't quite figure her out, and the way she acts with her eyes and with like subtle movements of the mouth. I mean, she's just so compelling to watch. And then this film, again, like I can't think of better casting. And I want to give a shout out to Edward G. Robinson, who this is my favorite performance of him personally. And I've seen him in other noirs like Key Largo, also with Humphrey Bogart. But Edward G. Robinson, I love him in this movie. He, you know, he plays opposite of Fred McMurray. He's trying to figure out what's going on. You know, the insurance guy who will not give up, and kind of the thorn in Phyllis Dietrichson and Walter Neff's side. Like, he's the reason that this all pretty much goes downhill. But I love him so much because he's also kind of like got an edge to him. You know, he's not perfectly lovable. But the chemistry, I think, between him and Fred McMurray is a really compelling relationship. It's not romantic. It's like this platonic love. But I think at the end, when they share the final scene together and he lights his cigarette and he's like, I love you too. There's something really powerful about that, that I think makes this film perfect, like right in the beginning, all the way right to the end. And yeah, I love this film. I think it's in my top 10 films of all time. So shout out to Billy Wilder for managing to get, I think, two in there. But I mean, I could talk about this movie forever. It's amazing. And I love it so much.
Yeah, it's so good. It's really incredible. And my number two is Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And this was the first one from him that I saw. And immediately, I remember just being so enamored by it in that opening sequence where, similar to Double Indemnity, the ending is spoiled in the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And from then, I'm like, how did we get here? How did this go down? What exactly happened and what have you? And I am a sucker for movies that are commentating on Hollywood itself. I love movies about filmmaking. I love movies about writers and actors and storytellers. And I just think the concept of a movie set in the present day of when this is set in the 50s, and then the screenwriter meets this once famous actor who was a silent film star, and now she's faded from the limelight because she's like, the talkies will never be a thing, the silent films will come back, blah blah blah. I just want to say that the acting in this film is absolutely incredible. It's fantastic. But, and I said this to Sarah, Norma Desmond is one of the scariest characters I think ever put to screen, and I know that that's purposeful and everything. Her unhingedness and her deranged nature really genuinely freaks me out. It's her performance as this character is scarier than performances in straight up horror movies. And if you really think about it, you could look at this as kind of a horror film to some extent, mm-hmm. where she's so obsessive with wanting to get back in the spotlight and how she would go to places that are really dark to get to that level again.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, major shout out to Gloria Swanson. She really is unbelievably good here. I'm like, it's a great performance. And then of course, you know, you brought up William Holden as Joe. He's great as well. And then the rest of the cast too is really wonderful. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm just going to say that the guy who plays Max, her butler, major shout out to him. He's incredible in this as well. I feel like his performance doesn't get talked about as much as the starring two performances here, which makes mm-hmm. sense. We get a great cameo from Cecil B. DeMille towards the end of this movie, which I love. One of my favorite cameos in a film from an actual person, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of this film is insane. It's insane. I mean, if you haven't seen the film at this point, what are you doing? The film is, you know, 74 years old, and you're due yourself a watch. Like, you need to check this out. It's one of the most influential films of all time. Huge Oscar player, got nominated for so many Oscars. One of the most iconic and celebrated film noirs ever made. Also, very terrifying and honestly pretty funny at times, too. Again, the genius of Billy Wilder is that he's able to balance all these different genres into one.
Mm-hmm.
I get very weary whenever filmmakers try to blend multiple genres into one project because the execution of it could fall flat. Mm-hmm. With the case of Billy Wilder, he finds a way of making it work and flow very, very well. And this movie clocks in at almost 2 hours. It flies by very quickly. That by the time when you get to the end, you're like, that's it, it's over. I wanted more with these characters. And yeah, everyone's great. The imagery is great. There's a lot of shots that literally haunt me, particularly with Norma Desmond. Like the sequence where they're watching some of her older films, so that she just gets up and then does that weird thing with her hand that just stares down at Joe. I remember watching this in high school for the first time, and I was just sitting in my desk chair just being so terrified by this character. And even 10 years later, after seeing this for the first time, I'm still terrified by this. And people can make fun of me all they want. They're like, why are you scared of her? She's just a deranged old lady. And I'm like, yeah, she's a deranged old lady going to places that are very bad to get what she wants. And then the last shot of the movie where she just walks to the camera and everything, mm-hmm. walks to the camera. I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille. And then just walks to the camera. Oh, my God. I don't even want to imitate her face. If you look at the poster for this movie, you see the facial expression that she makes primarily throughout the movie. And it's just like, even looking at it right now, I'm just like, I want to just stare away. I'm putting my hand over the poster right now. You guys can't see it, but it's just so insane. No, it's a really wonderful film. I adore this film so much. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, this was really battling it out for the number one spot. But the number one film for me from Billy Wilder, I watched it at a really special time, a really important time. And it was the perfect film to watch at that point, to where it immediately became a favorite of mine. But Sunset Boulevard is amazing. It's so good. And one of my bucket list goals as a huge theater fan, I am dying to see the musical on stage. I heard that musical is very celebrated. Glenn Close is best known for playing Norma Desmond on Broadway. They've been trying to make a film adaptation of that musical, which I hope they do, because not that this is an Oscar podcast or anything. Go listen to the Laurel and Tape if you want to hear about the Oscars. This could be Glenn Close's way of winning an Oscar, because, like, musical, film about film, just seems like it's inevitable. But we'll see whatever happens with that. But, yeah, Sunset Boulevard is my number two. I love it really to pieces. But do you agree with me? Am I crazy for saying that Norma Desmond is one of the scariest characters ever?
Oh, no, she's terrifying. And I think you're right. Like, this film is of everything else that it is a scary movie, despite it not being a straight up horror film. And I think, you know, Wilder, and I could say this about all the films that we've discussed so far, he's so good at casting his films. Like, you know, Gloria Swanson is a fantastic actress. And not only is she a fantastic actress, she was a silent film star. So we have like these layers of like, is this Gloria Swanson? Is this Norma Desmond? Like, and I think that's what makes this movie a little bit scarier, because she's a real person, and this character, other than the name, is so based in reality. And Gloria Swanson knocks it out of the park, like, to a degree that is like almost concerning. Like, you know, because I think she has some truth in her performance. You know, silent film did end. Her career as a silent film star did have to end, but I mean, shout out to her. I mean, she killed it in a talkie, you know, like this is, you would never think that she was more comfortable maybe in silent films, because this was fantastic. But then you can also see like her silent film training, because like you said, her expressions and her use of hands and the way that she fills the screen is so cool and enamoring and creepy. Like, it,
yeah,
really creepy.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to also say that we've been talking about a lot of films where women are very pivotal in these films. I usually am very iffy with the idea of a man writing a female character, but I think Billy Wilder is one of the rare examples to where his female characters, you can make the argument saying that maybe they're not the best written. To me personally, I think they're all very well written characters. I think they're very well fleshed. It does help too that he gets these incredible actors to bring these characters to life. But I think it's one of those case scenarios to where male filmmakers or male writers who try to write female characters should honestly take notes from Billy Wilder, because he is one of the few examples to where a female character written by a male actually pans out quite well, at least for me personally.
No, I 100% agree. I would say, especially in more of classical Hollywood, like Billy Wilder really knocks it out of the park. And you're right. I think he's smart enough to cast people and actresses who can flesh out these characters more because they have, you know, the lived experience and then they understand these characters. But, you know, I think Gloria Swanson is perfect because he writes this character and then he brings somebody who can relate to it in some way, shape or form. And I think the same goes with like Shirley MacLaine. You know, I think she has this like sweet sensibility to her, and in The Apartment, you know, there's this innocence that she brings that Wilder might have wrote, but he couldn't do it without her. And we've talked about Marilyn Monroe a little bit, and I'm sure we will some more. You know, Marilyn Monroe, her characters are kind of, you know, a little bit of a ditzier blonde or, you know, the pretty girl. And they're, to me, if another director wrote her, and some did, in these types of roles, she could only be seen as that. But I think in his films, Marilyn and him together bring a really nice layered character where Marilyn is a beautiful woman and her characters are a beautiful woman and she has these goals or she's funny or maybe sometimes she can be ditzy, but at the same time, I think she has a layer of independence and you know, more to her and more emotion than just being the pretty girl on screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, so I think of all classical writers, I think Billy Wilder might be the best at writing women, at least the best male, not the best woman, but he's one of the best, I would say, at writing female characters. And thank God he is, because that's probably why I love these movies so much, because they have that to them.
Exactly. Absolutely. And now our number one, our favorite Billy Wilder film of all time. We both have the same number one. It's very obvious, unless Sarah throws another curveball to me, but I could never. I would be very shocked if that's the case. So, Sarah, could you tell the listeners and myself what your favorite Billy Wilder film of all time is and why it's your favorite Billy Wilder film of all time? It's obviously a film that's very high on your list of favorites ever. Mm-hmm. So I want to see the passion. I want to see a spark light up as you're talking about this really incredible film. So tell the listeners what your number one pick is.
Of course. Let me just stretch out. I'm ready. So from 1959, my favorite movie from Billy Wilder, and I think my number two favorite movie of all time is Some Like It Hot, starring Marilyn Monroe, Tony Curtis, and Jack Lemmon. This is one of the best comedies ever. I'll go ahead and say that. It's from 1959. It has not aged. This is funny in 2024. I don't care what anyone says. Basically, for those of you who might not be familiar with it, don't tell me, though, because it will break my heart. Two musicians, Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon's characters, witness a mob hit. And they basically have to go on the run. And since they're musicians, they're like, oh, we could go on the run with a band someplace out of the state, far away. And they find one band that needs two players that happen to also be the instruments they play. But it's an all-women band. And so their solution is they will dress and pose as women to get on this band and go all the way down to Florida, away from where they witnessed the hit. And on this train and then in Florida, they, you know, have to interact with this band, pretend to be a girl, love all the things girls love, and they come into contact with Marilyn's character, who is a member and singer in the band. Of course, a beautiful woman that they cannot have feelings for because they're women as well. And also dressed as women, they have to deal with what women go through, and that's men constantly pursuing them. All the same time, the mob is still after them. So you can imagine that plays out in a really funny way. I want to go watch it right now. This movie is perfect. First off, I think the concept is super creative and funny and completely out of the park, you know. And I think, just like we were saying, Billy Wilder can handle writing women in a way that's not offensive. And on the other side, you know, it's layered and complex and well-written, where they're not just, you know, single-note female characters or token female characters. I think it's interesting that Wilder plays with the idea of a man dressing as a woman, which I think plays into the ideas of sexuality really well. Like, this movie is not offensive. This is not to make fun of anybody who cross-dresses or uses drag or things like that. That's never the main joke. And in a way, it, you know, it's reassuring to see that in the 50s, this is funny and in a nice way. This is not an aged joke about cross-dressing men or anything like that, or men in drag. It's hysterical. And Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon, specifically, I think Tony Curtis, who is very masculine and this handsome guy from Hollywood, him dressing as a woman is so funny. And him having to deal with having a crush on a woman and dressing as a woman and then dressing as a different man so he can woo the woman and then trying to get her perspective as a woman. It's so funny to watch. And then Jack Lemmon on the other side plays this woman and adopts this personality as Daphne. And he loves it. He loves playing her and he gets really into it. He has so much fun. And then he meets a suitor who is absolutely in love with him and has to take him on a date. And you know, he loves it. It's funny. And in the end, then they're all together and it's just the perfect ending for me with the iconic line, "Nobody's perfect." I can't say enough about how great this film is. And it has so many layers of, if you want to say it has political or things to say, maybe, I don't know. But the bottom line is it's funny and it's never funny at the expense of anybody. I think it's just funny for everybody. It's funny to women. It's funny to men. It's funny to anybody in between. It's funny to people who like to dress maybe more feminine or more masculine. I don't think this is an offensive movie at all. And on top of that, it's just a crazy movie with Marilyn Monroe, who's playing this really sweet and also really funny character. I think Billy Wilder does a great job at making her funny. I think that's all I can say right now. I love this movie so, so much, and I'll probably watch it again soon. You know, if Double Indemnity is my first, you know, most watched film, most rewatched film, I would say Some Like It Hot is probably my second. I love showing this film to everybody. I love watching it with my family because they all love it. And I'm excited that yours is probably the same.
It is indeed also Some Like It Hot. So like I said at the top, I really started getting into Billy Wilder's films during like the height of COVID, when COVID first started and we were all in lockdown and everything. And because I had this class, I was watching all these films that were directed by Billy Wilder. And this was one that I didn't really know too much about other than Marilyn Monroe was in it. And I was watching it and I'm like, this is like genuinely funny, not just like, oh, it's funny and whatever. It's genuinely hysterical. I was sitting in my room watching it, just laughing and like putting my hand on my chest just because of how funny it was. I was shocked. I was genuinely shocked by how much I was laughing during this movie. And for a film that came out in 1959, like you said, somehow this film is still just as funny now as it was back in the 50s. It's really impressive how you watch a comedy that came out so long ago that still finds a way of holding up now, many years later. I mean, over 60 years later, and this film is still regarded as one of the most iconic comedies of all time. It's universally loved by a lot of people. I understand that the subject may not necessarily appeal everyone, but somehow the way that it's depicted very hysterically and to the point where it doesn't feel offensive. It's a great concept executed beautifully, not only because of the writing and the directing, but really without these actors, the concept would not have worked as well as it does. Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon both commit to the bit, and they are both exceptional, especially Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon in this film is one of my favorite comedic performances ever put to screen. Jerry / Geraldine, and then later Daphne. It's a great character arc. It's so great, and I really love how you brought up how with Joe, Tony Curtis' character, he dresses up as a woman, he's very masculine, and then he tries to fall in love with Sugar, Marilyn Monroe's character, by disguising himself as another man, Shell Oil Jr., and you know, he adds this little accent and everything, and then Jack Lemmon as Jerry / Daphne, he embraces the idea of being a woman and loves it because he gets this attraction of this very wealthy man, Osgood, who Joe Brown as Osgood, fantastic performance, great supporting character, one of the funniest supporting characters they've ever written for a film. He's so funny. Like, when I first watched this movie, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to get annoying so quickly. Mm-hmm. He was funny the whole time. Just, like, his obsession with Daphne was just so lovely and everything, and how he was like, I see myself being with you. And even though he doesn't know that, you know, Daphne is really Jerry, it adds a lot of comedy to it. And Marilyn Monroe is so great in this as well. I think that she, of course, is absolutely stunning in this, to be expected, but there's also a lot of layers to her and how, you know, she's this really wonderful singer and ukulele player, but she wants to do more than just be a singer and a ukulele player. She has dreams, she has ambitions, and then same with these other characters as well, and Joe and Jerry, they're struggling musicians based in the Chicago area, and they want to be bigger and travel and everything. Then, of course, this event happens where they witness a mob hit and they have to go on the run. And like you said, that adds a lot of comedy as well, with the mob chasing down them and figuring out where these guys went, and then just realizing, oh, they disguised themselves as women and now they're in Florida performing with this all-women group. I love it so much. The romance is great. The comedy is great. It really has become one of my favorite films of all time. It was one of the rare cases to where I watched the movie and gave it a 5-star on the first watch. That's a very rare thing for me. I try to cut back on that. People are like, you give out too many 5-stars like they're candy. And I'm like, well, listen, if a movie's that great and it just impacts me, of course I'm going to give it 5 stars. But this is one of those case scenarios to where I watched it and I was just so blown away by it. And the ending, one of my favorite endings of all time, top 5 film endings of all time for me. And I mean that sincerely. The whole chase sequence is great, how they just run down to the boat and everything, and how, you know, Jerry is listing all these things that, you know, about why he can't be with Osgood and everything. It's just so good how he's like, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that, or I can't have children. Well, we'll adopt. I smoke. Ah, that's okay. I drink way too much. Ah, that's all right. I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect. The end. Cut to black. Brilliant ending. Just incredible ending. One of the most iconic endings of all time. And God, it's such a wonderful film. It's so great. And I didn't think that I would be as blown away by a comedy that came out so long ago compared to comedies we have, you know, that come out in modern times and everything. But I think it comes to show that just because a movie came out so long ago doesn't mean that it can't hold up now, many years later. And that's the case with a lot of Billy Wilder's films. He made these films 60, 70, 80 years ago, and they find a way of still working very well to this day, more so than stuff that we get nowadays, which is crazy. This, to me, is my favorite romantic comedy. I think that this garners the spot for that. It's one of my top 10 comedies of all time, and it's in my top 20 films of all time. And as I'm talking about with you, honestly, I might find a way of bumping it into my top 10 films ever made. Honestly, maybe even top 5. Like, it's that good. It's that good. And the musical was just on Broadway. That was a hit. I got to see it before it ended its run, and I really enjoyed that as well. I will say that they made some very minor changes to the story that I wasn't super fond of, but it was pretty much prior to the movie itself. It was pretty much the same story front and back. But yeah, I love this film so much. Anytime I get the opportunity to talk about Some Like It Hot on this podcast, I immediately glow up. So when I reached out to you, asked if you wanted to come on the show, and we figured out we would talk about Billy Wilder, I was like, yes, I get to talk about Some Like It Hot again on the podcast. I'm so excited. So yeah, that's my number one favorite Billy Wilder film of all time. It really just doesn't get better than that. I really do think that it's the most rewatchable thing that he's ever done. It's the funniest thing that he's ever done. It's definitely the most universally loved thing that he's done. I mean, that's debatable, because like The Apartment is so beloved, Sunset Boulevard is so beloved, Double Indemnity is so beloved, but I feel like a lot of people celebrate this film, and rightfully so. It's great. And if anyone out there somehow has not seen Some Like It Hot, then what are you doing? Why are you listening to this podcast? Go watch the movie and then come back and finish this podcast. It's one of the greatest films ever put to screen. I love it, love it, love it so much. Do you have a favorite quote from the movie, Sarah?
Ooh, that's a good question. I gotta think. I mean, I think the end, nobody's perfect, is just so funny at the end, because I mean, I'm already laughing so hard from the rest of the film. Like, that was, I can't think of a better way to end a film. And I think with comedy, it is so hard to end a movie like on a high, you know, because you've exhausted all your jokes, you've had the climax and everything. So like, how do you end a funny film still being funny or even funnier? So I think that's one of my favorites. I really like, I don't have a specific quote, but I really like when Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon are first becoming women, and then they're in heels and they're like, Jesus, like, I can't believe they walk in these. And then they're on the train and they kind of have a crush on Sugar, both of them. And Tony Curtis goes to Jack Lemmon. He's like, remember, you're a man, you're a man. And Jack Lemmon's like, I'm a man, I'm a man. I wish I was dead. Like, he was struggling, and he's just so funny during them. And I do like it when Jack Lemmon, looks at Osgood and he's like, I'm a lady, and like smacks him. Cause you know, they went for the, that was so funny to me. I think just Jack Lemmon in general is just so perfect in this film. Every scene he's in is just side splittingly funny. Like, so good.
Yeah, I agree. Like, he is like the MVP of the entire film. Like, everything that he says and does is just hysterical. Even if what he says isn't necessarily funny, it's just how he delivers the lines that makes it so funny. And this isn't a line that he says, but this is a bit of a banter between Sugar and Joe. How Sugar's like, if my mother could only see me now. And then Joe's like, I hope my mother never finds out. It's just so good. It's so good. Huh, will you look at that? Look at how she moves. It's like Jell-O on springs. Must have some sort of built-in motor or something. I tell you, it's You're a whole so different good. Sex. Oh my god, it's great. It's so good. I don't know how, but it's just that good. It's that good. Jack Lemmon should have won the Oscar for this. He was nominated for Best Actor for this, and the fact that he didn't win is very disappointing to me.
Yeah. And I think comedy is, like, weirdly never celebrated as much as other films. But I would argue, and I think that this is the case for Billy Wilder, like, comedy and to be funny is so much harder, I believe, than anything else. Because I think of everything, comedy is the most subjective. Like, it is so hard to be funny to everyone. Drama, everybody knows when a moment is dramatic or when a moment is sad. And in thrillers, like, everybody... There, you know when all people are going to be thrilled because you're not giving them all the details. But to be funny to such a wide audience, I think is so hard to do. And Wilder manages to be funny to so many people, but and funny to us now. Like you like you said, 60 years later, 60, maybe more.
65
years later. That's crazy. Like to be funny, especially, you know, I think comedy is really struggling right now. We have so many rules and you know, guidelines you have to follow so you don't offend a certain minority. And like we said, Wilder, a man to write a movie really about women or about being a woman, because your two main characters are now trying to dress as women. And then you have Sugar's character. Like that's a hard thing to do in 2024. And I can imagine it wasn't very easy to do in 1959, you know, when women didn't exist. Like, you know, I think this was like a strong and hard task for him. And he really knocked it out of the park because, you know, you could say this movie has political implications or deeper meanings, but at the surface level, no matter what, this film is funny, like so funny and funny. Like I can watch it again and I'll still laugh, which is why I continue to rewatch it. And I think people can continue to revisit it. And gosh, it's such a good film. Like, and I think some of the top three actors, I think it's some of their best work, all three of them, you know, and they all come from pretty different films. I think Tony Curtis was probably the most serious out of all of them, but he's funny for some reason. And Marilyn Monroe, I think she did funny roles, but this is like a new level. And Jack Lemmon just finds everything that he's been building towards into like the role he was meant to be, even though he was dressed as a woman 90% of the film. It was for him.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better than myself. I mean, you said everything perfectly. And yeah, there's a reason why this film holds up as well as it does. And it's still so celebrating. And I agree, comedy is the hardest thing to do. It's very hard to make a good comedy. And it's very hard to be funny. Just like how there's the argument to be made about how comedic actors are probably the best dramatic actors as well, because it's something so different for them. And, you know, we live in a time, and we've talked about this many times, like on this podcast, on Rolling Tape, everywhere. This is an ongoing discussion in the film community. It's unfortunate that comedies don't get recognized the way that they quite frankly should. There was a period where comedies were really getting recognized by the Academy. Mm-hmm. And now we're in a time where a film like Barbie is up for all these Oscars. And even though there are dramatic elements in that film, that's more of a comedy than a drama. Mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling's performance, that's a straight up comedic performance. So the fact that that's up for an Oscar is really exciting. And mm-hmm. hopefully we get more performances and films like that, because not all the best films are dramas. There's a lot of great comedies out there too that should be recognized as well. And just because it's a comedy doesn't mean it should be pushed aside. So it was nice that there was a period where Billy Wilder made all these films that were up for Oscars and everything. And even though he didn't win an Oscar for this movie, he was already an Oscar winner at that point. Mm-hmm. He did win the following year for The Apartment. So, you know, he got three Oscars for that. He got screenplay, director, and picture. So, you know, they're like, oh, we're sorry for not awarding you for something like It Hot, but here you go. Here's three Oscars for this movie. That's also really great. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing else that we could say about Some Like It Hot. It's extraordinary. It's incredible. It's fantastic. 10 out of 10, no notes, A+, S-tier level film. So now we're just going to recap our list from 5 to 1, and then we'll just give a few shout-outs to some of the films that we checked out, if there are any shout-outs. So, Sarah, what is your list from 5 to 1?
Yes. So from 5 to 1, I have Sabrina, then Sunset Boulevard, Witness for the Prosecution, Double Indemnity, and Some Like It Hot.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is The 7-Year Inch. Number 4 is The Apartment. Number 3, Double Indemnity. Number 2, Sunset Boulevard. And number 1, Some Like It Hot. So that is it with our list. I would just love for you to give some honorable mentions. If you have any, do you have any honorable mentions? Because I know that you and I both talked about how we didn't watch as much as we both wanted to. But Do you have anything that you want to give a shout out to? I mean, obviously, The Apartment didn't make your list, but I know you were glowing about that movie and everything. But are there any other films that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, obviously, The Apartment and The 7-Year Inch. Those, you know, I've already kind of shouted out. They didn't make my top 5, but they're good films. And I haven't watched everything, but I would like to shout out films that I want to rewatch, because when I originally watched them, I gave them really low ratings. And I think I gave them low ratings because either I wasn't paying attention or something else was going on, because I can't imagine myself giving such low ratings to a Billy Wilder film. So I'd really like to rewatch 2 films specifically. I really want to watch Ace in the Hole, which is a very iconic noir, I think, and a very different noir. And it's starring Kirk Douglas. So I'm very interested to rewatch it. I remember it, but I gave it 1.5 stars. And I was on something. I think I was just tired, or it was probably the last Wilder film that I watched for class and I was over it. So forgive me, but I'm going to rewatch it. And I'm also going to rewatch The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes. That's from 1970, from Billy Wilder. This is one of his later films. It's also one of his only color films. Billy Wilder, notably, I don't think used a lot of color in his films, but this one is. I also gave it a really low rating, but I think The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, you know, we've kind of talked about how, you know, especially in Some Like It Hot, Wilder has kind of snuck in, I would say, some maybe political or stronger themes, especially relating to men. And I think that is true across the board for a lot of his films, as we've alluded to. The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes really does that and really talks about it. And I gave it a low rating because I wasn't paying attention to the film and I didn't get out of it what I needed to get out of it. But I want to watch it again. And I want to see what 1970 Billy Wilder is saying now that he has so many years behind him of like building up, you know, credibility as a director. Yeah. So shout out to them for low ratings.
Yeah, so Ace in the Hole is one that I do want to watch. I own the Criterion, and I definitely am due for a watch of that one. Witness for the Prosecution, of course, that's another one that I really want to watch. I watched The Lost Weekend. I wasn't very high on it, and honestly, I really do believe that I am due for a rewatch of that, even though I just watched it like 12 hours ago. I just don't think I was in the right headspace for that kind of movie. Like, I could see a lot of effort put into it, but it wasn't one that really wowed me. I didn't hate it, but I was just like, compared to everything else that Billy Wilder has put out, to me it felt like a step down, which is crazy because that film won a lot of Oscars, including Best Picture as well. So maybe if I'm in a better headspace, maybe I'll find some appreciation for that. But I also really want to watch Sabrina. I want to watch The Fortune Cookie, and The Front Page I really want to watch as well. I know that that's one of Billy Wilder's last films. It's, I believe that's his third to last movie that he put out. And it's kind of following the same plot as His Girl Friday, because it's based on the play The Front Page, which was an inspiration for His Girl Friday, which is, in my opinion, and I don't know about you, that's a masterpiece of comedy, in my opinion. That's another great comedy. Mm-hmm. And Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, they made so many movies together in the 60s and 70s. So it's one of the cooler pairings. And plus him working with Jack Lemmon, Billy Wilder and Jack Lemmon, it's like literal magic. It's kind of like an original version of like Scorsese and De Niro, if you think about like a frequent collaboration between director and actor. So those are ones for me that I want to check out. So overall, closing thoughts on Billy Wilder. He is one of the most influential filmmakers ever. He's one of the most iconic filmmakers of all time. It'd be really interesting to see what he would have pumped out now. And I actually like to pose this question to you before you give your closing thoughts. If Billy Wilder was still alive now, say he was in his 50s or 60s or 70s, who are two actors that you would want to work with Billy Wilder? Like, say he was making a film in 2024, who are two actors that you want him to work with? You could pick one guy and one girl. You could pick two guys, or you could pick two girls. Do what you want to do with that.
Okay, okay. I have one, like, right off the bat. Jim Carrey.
Okay.
I think because I think we were talking about how, like, really funny actors can also make really good serious actors. And I think Jim Carrey has proven that he can be really serious, and he has been in his later projects. And I think Billy Wilder does a good job at, like, pulling out the best in actors. And I would love to see what he did, if it was a funny film or if it was a really serious film. Like, I just think that that would be interesting for him. I want to pick an actress because I... Okay, this is, like, the one that popped in my mind. I love Viola Davis.
Okay.
Yes, I think... Now, obviously, she's done pretty much only serious roles. And so I think that she would fit well in, like, a... Maybe a noir for Wilder. However, if she was funny, I would love to see what he would come up with for, like, a funny Viola Davis film. I don't know if those exist because she's just such a great drama actor, but it might exist. And if anybody can write, as we've said, a funny female character, Wilder might be one of the only ones. But really what I should be saying is I wish Wilder would write with Greta Gerwig, because at that point, like, I don't think that anything will blow me away more. I mean, you have one of my favorite, like, one of the best screenwriters from the classical era, and I think one of the best screenwriters from this era together. I think that that we would blow Hollywood up. Like, it would just implode on itself. It wouldn't, I don't know what would happen. But I think that's really the collab I need to see. I want to see him write more. He'll find the actors. Like, I think that's fine. I think it's the writing that we need to focus on.
Absolutely. So for me, I'm going to do a romantic comedy in the vein of maybe having some noir thriller elements. Starring as the man, I'm going to pick someone who's very good in comedy. I'm going to pick someone who's very good in drama. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick someone who's very good in thrillers. Mark Ruffalo. I'm going to pick Mark Ruffalo. I just think Mark Ruffalo would work very well in a Billy Wilder film, because Mark Ruffalo is currently up for an Oscar nomination for probably his funniest performance to date in Poor Things. And, you know, he's done his fair share of really great dramas as well. So I'm going to go with that. And then in terms of the actress... this is really tough. This is very difficult. This person hasn't done as much comedy as I wish, but I think that when she does comedy, she's actually really, really great, and that's Kate Winslet.
Oh, okay.
Mark Ruffalo and Kate Winslet would be a really great pairing. I don't think they've worked together before, to my knowledge. I don't think so. Oh, no, they were both in Eternal Sunshine, but I don't think they had any scenes together. I just watched that movie again recently. No, I don't think they had any scenes together. Yeah, why not? Mark Ruffalo and Kate Winslet.
I like it. Can I add one more? I thought of another actress that I think I'd like. Sigourney Weaver.
Oh,
I think she, I don't know. She
would be great in a Billy Wilder film.
She's done funny and kind of ridiculous, and she's done serious, and I think she has such a great presence on screen. You know, like she can take down any man, I fully believe, on screen, and I think that for Wilder, that would make a really funny movie. And at the same time, she could be really dramatic, and I think, if anything, she would make a really great, like, femme fatale, especially kind of like Gloria Swanson, who is a little bit of an older actress, you know, compared to, like, Barbara Stanwyck. I think she'd kill it, totally.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're going to go with actors who are a little older now, you know, like, so I recently binged the show Hacks with Jean Smart, and she was in Babylon recently, where she fit that role and that world pretty perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think she would work with Billy Wilder very, very well as well. I think that would be a really cool pairing. Yeah, it's just so incredible. You always think about, like, oh, if this filmmaker was still alive, what actors would they be collaborating with? this is the last question I'll ask, mm-hmm. and then you could give your closing thoughts on Billy Wilder. Do you think that mm-hmm. Adam Driver would work really well with Billy Wilder?
Yeah, you know, I think he could. I think he could. He's got that balance to him. I think Adam Driver is like dry humorous. So I don't think he would be funny in like a Jack Lemmon type role where there's like expressions and goofiness to him. I don't think Adam Driver is goofy enough. But
he can't be goofy, like, though.
He can be, but it wouldn't work. I don't think it would work for me. I don't know. There's just something about him. He has a big presence, you know, probably just because he's a huge guy. But I think, like, you know, I said Tony Curtis is like a super masculine guy. He did serious roles and then he played this character. I think that Adam Driver could do it the same way Tony Curtis did it, where like he doesn't fully embrace this goofiness, but like there's still some in it, you know, and then he finds like his own way into this like storyline and plot. So maybe I would watch it. I would watch anything Billy Wilder put on the screen. I'd probably watch anything Adam Driver put on the screen too. So for both of their sake and mine, I hope it would work.
Yeah, definitely. So what are your closing thoughts on Billy Wilder, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, he is consistently, I think, one of the only directors/writers I know of that every project he turns out really does something or does something to me that I can't say too much bad about it. You know, not every single one of his films are my favorite. That being said, so many of his films are iconic and they speak to a lot of people and they don't age, as we've said. And whether they're dramatic or funny or they're in between, they do it really well and they really commit. And from the beginning all the way up to like these final closing lines and scenes, they're really strong. And it's so impressive how he was able to do that for like 30, 40 years, even longer for his career. I wish more people today would talk about him the same way they talk about like Scorsese, maybe Nolan, I don't know. Wes Anderson, some of these greats now, because I just feel like until I got to college, I didn't know who Billy Wilder was. And out of college, talking with people other than the film community, I don't think people know him the same way that they know some of these bigger directors, you know, and they should, because he's produced so many wonderful stories and films that have inspired so many comedies and dramas. As I said, he wrote the damn blueprint for like any 1940s, 50s thriller or noir. I firmly believe that. And that blueprint is still being used today in various ways. He's a master of comedy and being funny without offending anybody, which I think is really important today. And I think he's fantastic and one of my favorite directors of all time, one of my favorite writers, and I'm very thankful that two of his films are in like my top 10 of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, it was such a blast having you on the podcast today to talk about Billy Wilder. So thank you so much for coming on today to talk to me about Billy Wilder.
Yes, thank you so much. Anytime I can talk about Billy Wilder, Marilyn Monroe, or Some Like It Hot, just call me again.
Absolutely. So tell the listeners where they can find you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at sarah.sipley or flip it around on Twitter at sipley-sarah. And as Brian said, I do work on The Rolling Tapes. You can follow us on The Rolling Tape everywhere to hear more of my conversations, Brian's conversations, and our team.
I will put links for everything in the description below. Please give us a follow over The Rolling Tape and give Sarah a follow as well. And you guys could follow me at Brian Suffield on all social media platforms. You guys could subscribe to this podcast on any podcast platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Billy Wilder films. I'd be very curious to hear you guys' list. Be on the lookout for more great episodes coming your way. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.